time, while Solomon is king, Israel will never know as much opulence and wealth as they do at this time. They were tremendously wealthy. Solomon had brought, well, inherited, I guess, maybe a better way to say it, the country, you know, into a lengthy period of peace. And with that peace came prosperity. And with that prosperity came the trial that Jesus was talking about. To have great wealth is to some extent an affliction as much as it is a blessing. It is a blessing, but it's a dangerous one. It's like the blessing of an automobile or the blessing of a house. These are things that you have to take care of. They can also ruin you. And so they're blessings, but dangerous things. And so we have just a huge number of verses on that topic. If you're copying them down, I'm going to go ahead. This is the complete collection, but I'm going to start now and go verse by verse again like I did yesterday. And so where we got through last week was through chapter 18, or up to chapter 18 and 11. Remember we talked about this right there at the end of the class. A rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a high wall in his what? In his own imagination. And so you have to be careful about this. We're going to see passages, and already have, where it truly is a strong tower. Obviously, it's better to have problems with money than have problems without money. Money certainly is the answer to an awful lot of the world's problems. And so it's just kind of a dangerous thing, though, because the human being has a tendency then to begin to trust in their wealth and to depend upon their wealth, and very often to overextend themselves because of their wealth. And so Solomon, in his wisdom, is pointing out, you know, be careful here, because your imagination about how strong this tower is can certainly get you in a world of trouble. Now, talked about that last week, so the verses that we'll come to tonight now are chapter 19 and verse 4 to begin with. Wealth adds many friends, but a poor man is separated from his friends. And true, again, that you'll have loads of friends, what we often call fair-weather friends, as a result of success in this life. And if you'll skip down to verse 14, house and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. Well, we've talked about this one already with regard to the wives. You know, we looked at the last half. But health, wealth, on my mind from all that time we spent on health as well in the first part of our studies. But wealth, it says here in the first part of verse 14, is an inheritance from fathers. How many of you have seen the bumper sticker on the back of the big motorhome? We are spending. Well, that's funny, isn't it? Okay? And yet it's not, is it? And so Solomon was pointing out that for the wise individual, at least, I think he is commending all such parents here at verse 14, house and wealth are an inheritance from fathers. Hopefully, you know, you go through your life, you do as well as you possibly can, and then if you've been prudent, you know, you're not impoverished at the end, you have something. And then, of course, the only right thing to do is to pass that on to the kid, assuming what? That they can handle it. Many a wise parent has chosen to withhold that, even in death, recognizing that the children just don't have the kind of mind that would do well under this particular sort of a trial. Okay, any comment or question on chapter 19? We've already touched on elements of these, so I'm going a little bit faster, and there is a great deal of overlapping, as we've talked about, so you know, feel free, please raise your hand if you want to hesitate there, but I think these are you know, pretty self-evident. So let's come on over to chapter 21 now. Chapter 21 and down at verse 20. There is precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man swallows it up. Now that's an interesting one, because in a very real sense, what Solomon has said here is that for the wise, a savings account is a good thing. Wise people do look ahead, and they do set aside for emergencies. There's precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but this precious treasure and oil, it is, you know, a commodity. that you can then sell or use to help you with your problems. Certainly he's not committing greed or covetousness right here. He's not saying everybody should just sit, you know, on their money bags. But this is a wise thing to do in chapter 21 in verse 20. Precious treasure and oil belongs in the dwelling of the wise. You would expect that in the dwelling of the wise. But what does a foolish man do? It gobbles all the stuff up. The foolish man then is what we like to so lovingly refer to as a consumer. Right? Now in America, the consumers, you know, that's us, that's everybody, and it's all right to be a consumer. But there is a negative connotation to this too now, isn't there? What is the foolish man doing with all that he has? He's just eating it. He's using it up. He's spending it as fast as he can. He's always on the red line. He's not looking down the road and trying to lay something aside for the children back in chapter 19 or for themselves in the event, you know, something goes wrong, something cataclysmic befalls the nation or the community in which you live. And so Solomon is just simply recommending, I think, here, is pointing out that the wise, at least, would follow such advice. They're trying to lay something aside as best they can. Now, by the way, brethren, it's interesting for us to see the comparisons. What is a tithe? Under the old law, what was tithing? You had to give 10% of your wealth or income in first fruits to whom? Well, you say the church. The church is fine. Let's be more specific, though. I mean, I agree with that. But who actually is going to receive the tithe or work with the tithe or use the tithe? Okay, for the Levitical tribe, it was for the priesthood. They were the individuals then that were going to be devoting all of their time to the service of the Lord and those people. And consequently, they did not have the same sorts of occupations and endeavors as everybody else did. Now, then, let me ask you, what percentage of a Jew's wealth did they donate to the Lord? Is it 10%? Trick question. Trying to trap you all. Okay? 10% is off the top on first fruits. Were there any other sorts of tithes, not tithes is not the right word I want, but levies or taxes or setting aside or payments? Were there other things that they were also giving? What kind of a, you know, fill in the blank will offering is a tithe? It is not a free will offering, is it? No, free will offering is not a tithe. The tithe didn't have anything to do with free will. That was demanded. That was mandatory. But doesn't the Old Testament say quite a bit about free will offerings as well? Sure it does. What about the sacrifices when you committed a sin or at various occasions, not just with sin, when they're offering sacrifices? Is that all out of the tithe? No, that's what? That's on top of the tithe. I've seen figures where they estimate that the average Jew was donating about 30% of his income in one way or another through the tithe, these other sacrifices, and these other offerings, as much as a third of their income every year. That just boggles our minds, doesn't it? It just boggles the mind. And so, in different culture, different times, I understand that, and to a very real extent, a more direct, I think, relationship between God and man at that time. They, you know, God was in a more physical relationship, if you will, and a direct relationship with them. But still, I think it, you know, the principle stands that we should be thinking in terms of our righteousness being relatively what in comparison to the Pharisees? Let your righteousness exceed that of the scribes and Pharisees. Now, it's perfectly appropriate, you know, and I commend you if you think in terms of righteousness as being personal morality, personal behavior, and all of that, you know, so the kind of character that we want to manifest to the world at large, but is that the only thing that's involved? Was the tithe a part of their righteousness?
Well, certainly it was. And so while the New Testament does not say anything about having to give a tithe, and if an individual cannot give a tithe in accordance with the other passages in the New Testament, we're just studying the Old right now, you know, about having, you know, being prospered and all that, still, what we come down to is a realization that everything we have comes from the Lord. Everything we have, then, He owns. Everything that we have originates in Him, and our attitude ought always to be, what? Maximums or minimums? Maximums. How many of you heard Homer Haley ever preach that sermon? Homer Haley was very famous for a sermon he called Maximums and Minimums. And it just was about the minimums that God establishes. But how it is that God never expected that people would be just trying to barely scrape by, figuring out what was the least they could possibly do in His service. And as long as you met that bottom tier, you know, of responsibility, then all would be well. Homer's point, of course, was that God would expect us to so deeply and truly and fully and completely appreciate how utterly dependent we are upon Him, and then He'd make the application in this country, of course, how very much highly blessed, you know, and beyond all other nations that we are, that we would really be striving for something more, for maximums in every aspect of our life. But in all of this, God recognizes relationships that we have directly to Him, and then to our family, to the church, to friends and neighbors, you know, we still have those responsibilities as well. Was the point of the widow's mite that God wanted you to give your every last red cent and, you know, and live in poverty, you know, while you're trying to, is that the point of that story? Yeah, when Jesus observes this, He commends her in relation to the Pharisees because, and I'm using different terms now, because her righteousness, what? Seated that of the Pharisees, didn't it? She couldn't give as much, but what she gave cost her more. Okay? Now, taking these relationships we just talked about with tithing, the rest of this, and then looking over here at the family, you're well aware, if a man does not care for his own family, then what? Worse than an infidel if he's not doing that. So there's a balancing act that's going to be taking place here. And even more so as you move into Christianity from the Old Testament, because more of the responsibility is on us, less of the mandatory dictation of what has to be done, and more of the free will, it's up to you to decide what is to be done. And so in this balance, though, this passage is talking about, we've seen a couple of them now, about an individual looking at their household, looking at their children and descendants after them, and doing what they can to provide for them while still what? Making certain that you are well-pleasing in the sight of the Lord, that you are serving the Lord, as Abraham put it. And so what we're finding out with all these many verses in the book of Proverbs is Solomon, being this wisest man, helping us to strike that balance, helping us to think in terms of maximums, helping us to think in terms of not just the present, but also the future, helping us to think in terms of those things that are spiritual as well as those things that are physical. In every aspect of our lives, this wisest and most successful of men is presenting to us then, you know, the rules and regulations on how it's going to work if you're going to succeed in all these various areas. So one last time in chapter 21, in that verse 20. There is precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man swallows it up. So in the dwelling of the wise, you will find these good things, or you will expect to find them at least. So any comment or question on that? Yeah, go ahead, Carol.
But the wise person has counted the cost and have spent it wisely or waited to spend it so they didn't have to pay interest or didn't buy something when it wasn't on sale, so that they would have extra to be able to give to somebody. So they handled the money responsibly. That's the difference.
Responsibly is the key. Amen to that. I got a letter this week, faraway state, not anybody you could possibly know. It's not anything to do with the congregation here. But, a woman who was telling me about the gambling problem that her husband had. Where was all the money going? Various forms, of gambling. Like anything, it's easier now than it ever was. Although there's been busts recently, it can be done, on the internet. It can be done, in many different states. It can be done in many different forms and different ways. And that's just not responsible. So Solomon is saying, the wise individual is on top of this. They think about these things. They plan and they organize and they prepare so that you have, the fulfillment of the Old Testament even before the New, and in reverse there, but you have laying by in store as you have been prospered. And what that requires above all things is not just that God blessed you with a tremendous amount of money, but that you are paying attention to how you've been prospered. You know how you've been prospered. You evaluated it. And so it's a conscious effort to handle that money appropriately. Okay, chapter 22 now, and down in verse 4. The reward of humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. And that's why I said health a little while ago when I meant wealth. And that is one that we already talked about from the very first chapter. And so I'm just going to pass on that one altogether unless someone has an observation or comment there. Okay, we already covered that verse. So let's move on to chapter 23 and look at verses 4 and 5. Hey, that reminds me, I forgot to do something back in... everybody, turn back to chapter 21. And while it's not... it is directly related, but not in the same way, maybe. Make certain somehow... And the way I did it was I drew a circle around the verse number 20. That's the one verse we looked at, 21:20, at the end of that second column. Okay, and then I drew a line up three verses, and I also circled 17. You really need to be able to just see visually whenever you come to the chapter to tie those two together. He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich. Well, see, I didn't put that in this list because it's about the opposite of being wealthy. But you can see how they're tied together. So I'll try to, help do that as we go through the book, is tying things not only with an immediate context like a list on wealth, but also on a related thing, which in this place is the converse and goes with the last part of verse 20. A foolish man swallows it up. Well, here he is in verse 17. A foolish man loves pleasure. And what will he become? Now, do you enjoy pleasure? Ask me if I had a bowl of ice cream last night. Ask me if it was bigger than it should have been. Ask me if I ate Pop-Tarts yesterday, too. I'm not going to feel good as like anybody else. Okay? So, sure. But at the same time, I have to be real careful here. If you love pleasure, what's the idea there? Inordinate. It's one of my favorite words, inordinate. Everybody learned that one. Inordinate means out of line. It means not properly, restrained. If you love pleasure, it will run away with you. Okay? So I had some ice cream the other night. Do I have ice cream every night?
No.
Yeah, how do you know whether I do? What is that? It's tricky, isn't it? Actually, no, thank you. That's the point of it all. Somebody had a hand up over here, I think. No? Okay. All right. So link those two together, though, where you have the verse 17 being the converse, really, of chapter 20, verse 20, rather. Okay. Now let's go to chapter 23, where I was headed in verses 4 and 5. Okay. Do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone, for wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. Now when an eagle flies toward the heavens, brethren, picture it. When an eagle is flying toward the heavens, what is happening visually to the eagle? It's getting smaller and smaller and smaller, isn't it? Till pretty soon, this is gone. Okay? It's a beautiful picture right there. So, don't weary yourself to gain it. Now, that's going to be something that every single individual has to judge for themselves. Are you just spending too much time on it? How many parents, and most especially the fathers, you know, save, of course, to be a single mother, are wasting away in the pursuit of these things? And what are the kids starving for? There's no comparison between the two, is there? Okay? So if you are going to be impoverished financially, but you can spend the time with the kids that they need to be wise and prudent and successful in their own right and on their own in the years to come, you know, don't trade your children for the income. How many parents do that? It's just a terrible temptation, isn't it? It's just a terrible temptation. And so many parents will do that, losing sight of what really matters and sacrificing the kids on this altar of prosperity, you know, and success. Don't weary yourself to gain wealth. Many years ago, a guy named Harry Chapin wrote a song, and some of you may have heard. He was on the radio for quite a while. It was called Cats in the Cradle. Cats in the Cradle, a silver spoon, a little boy blue, man on the moon. But you remember how that song went? It was just one of the most heartbreaking songs. Every time I heard that thing, it just brought me close to tears. When it came out, I still had little kids at home. It was all about, you know, a child arrived just the other day, came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away. And he was talking before I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm going to be like you, Dad. You know I'm going to be like you. And at the end of the song, what happened? He was. Now Dad was saying, can you come over? And he's saying, well, the kid's with the flu and all this. And so, you know, but it was nice talking to you on the phone. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, my boy was just like me. Okay? What a tragedy that is. Just don't let that happen, and don't weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, when you love it, as we saw in the preceding verse, then it makes itself wings like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. Now, brethren, I'm not sure about this. Yeah, I appreciate anybody's comment there. But that reads to me what God's saying. If I observe you doing this, then you set your eyes on it, you weary yourself for it, then what? God will see that this takes place. Now I understand Solomon in his wisdom, it doesn't say God, you know, himself at all, so I'm not sure how to press this, but when you read that, how does it sound to you? Doesn't it seem to be very much a cause and effect? So look at the verses again. To me, it reads that way. Do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. And it's as if that wealth didn't have those wings until what? You set your eyes on it. See, you got all goo-goo-eyed, you know, and then the next thing you know, all the fortunes, the tables, have turned. That may be the blessing you really needed. And then that wealth that you had before was a temptation that you really just couldn't handle. And so at least the way Solomon presented it, it seemed to have a cause and effect sort of a thing there. Certainly God now is more concerned about rescuing us, saving us, than he is in condemning us. And if they're, you know, and I have no doubt that he works to that end. Okay, any comment or questions there on 4 and 5? Go ahead, Carol.
Well, just that couldn't find the proverbs that you were talking about before, but it said that if you set your eyes on righteousness and wisdom, that money will, that wealth can come to you. That wealth is a sign of wisdom and righteousness. And so if you're setting your eyes on the money and not on wisdom and righteousness, that would be why it would fly away, because it is a gift from God.
Yeah, good for you. Carol always does such a good job of everybody being able to hear what she says since she projects her voice there. But we saw a lot of cause and effect already, haven't we? And that cause and effect, when you're seeking wisdom, you know, that's going to come your way too, as well as the wealth. And so we have seen that cause and effect relationship already earlier. Was it, say there's somebody else had a hand up there. Say, Rita. Have to be very careful about that. Whose idea was that in the New Testament? The Pharisees and just about everybody. You know, I mean, what was the response of the apostles? What he said, easier for a rich man, I mean, easier for the camel than it is for the rich man. Do you remember what the apostles' response was? Well, then, who could be saved? What? You know, you do. It's easy to get the idea. And, of course, especially in our denominational world, they teach that it's just an absolute guarantee and that you can demonstrate, you know, that you must be righteous if you have a lot of money. And this, of course, is just farthest thing from the truth, too. So, again, it's striking that balance. Yes. Only about their wisdom. And with that, we'll pass on to the next chapter. Chapter 24, verses 3 and 4. By wisdom, a house is built, and by understanding, it is established. And by knowledge, the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. Now, again, and this is like the umpteenth time now, which we've seen it both in this list as well in that much earlier list where health and wealth were coming to us by means of wisdom and righteousness. This relationship here that you have in verses 3 and 4 of apparently great wealth, does God put any kind of a caveat on top of that, that somehow this would be a bad thing? Is anybody being faulted here for having their own home, for having rooms that are filled with precious and pleasant riches? Is there anything wrong with that? No. So we mentioned this about 2 weeks ago, but we need to be careful. Again, I think it was in a different context even than this list. But, you know, be very, very careful that jealousy, that envy, do not creep into your life. Everybody on this earth, brethren, has somebody that's up above them and somebody that's down below in every kind of category you can think of. Whether it's physical strength and health, or it comes to financial matters, or, you know, lucky in love, whatever you want to talk about, you know, everybody's got somebody that's doing better, and everybody's got somebody that's doing worse. And what is the tendency, then, no matter where you are, when you look at somebody that's worse, what's the temptation? Sure, which is to say you're arrogance, conceit, some sort of, you know, self-satisfaction. Nebuchadnezzar's, look what I've done. Okay? Better than you. All right? Then you look up above and what? Then comes this temptation to envy. This is totally off the subject, but I think it still makes the illustration. I read somewhere one time, you know, some of our philosophers, he says, have you ever noticed that everybody that drives slower than you is stupid, and everybody that drives faster is crazy? It's really true, isn't it? Because when you're out in the car, what are we all just, you know, unconsciously, what are we thinking? Who's the only person doing it right? It's you. You're the only one. Everybody else is wrong, no matter what they're doing. Okay? And brother, we do exactly the same thing with our station in life. And I really hate to use the word status. When you use the word status, I think it has kind of a different, you know, it has more freight in the word than your station. When you say station, it's just kind of neutral. It's where you are.
Okay? Well, where was Solomon? In his day, I think he made Bill Gates look like a pauper. He just really did. Okay? But so he had it all. But what did he also maintain or keep about him? His wisdom. He says so in the first part of Ecclesiastes in this case. Okay? And so now he's just trying to help us to understand, when you start with those criticisms, and particularly in the church, what is the word that is the appropriate word for what you're doing? What are you doing to your brother? You are judging them. Are we supposed to be judges of our brothers and sisters in Christ? No. And so no matter where you are on the scale, what had Paul learned? Whatsoever state I'm in, what? He learned how to be content. He learned how to handle abundance. He learned how to handle want. He had passed through all those stations in life, and most of us will. It's beginning, you know, to appear to me that you get to occupy several different stations in the course of a lifetime. God's way maybe of teaching us something, you know, on all ends of the spectrum. Well,
I can't remember if it's a song or just another review in Proverbs, but what is it you're supposed to, is it speak kindly or be kind to everyone you pass on the way up? Because what? Look at the Bob Dylan song. He said, sooner or later you'll meet them on the way down. Okay. But the song is derived, you know, from being careful about how you treat people, because sooner or later you're going to meet them on the way back down.
So it's lonely at the top, right? Problem is, most people get stayed there.
Mark. Just thinking, can we look at this in a different way?
That's right.
Not monetary wealth.
Okay.
The house is built and you fill the room with knowledge, with wisdom, with riches in that matter.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Margaret did that last week, the same thing, and that we would be wise, I think, to recognize that since Solomon has already laid down that wisdom is more valuable than what? All these precious jewels and whatnot. So if he's placing more value on them, then when he talks about precious jewels, as Marge is pointing out, and the others have too, that may be what he's talking about. He's trying to get us to appreciate them. In this case, you know, to take Marge's approach to this, look at verse 3 and 4 again. By wisdom a house is built, by understanding it is established, and by knowledge the rooms are filled with precious and pleasant riches. Well, what has Solomon identified as being the most precious and the most pleasant of all riches?
Wisdom.
More wisdom and knowledge, see? You're piling that stuff up. Brethren, can you get too much Bible under your belt? You just really can't. It's not possible. Spend as much time with the book as you humanly can. Carry, you know, a little pocket edition around. Everybody's got some kind of phone or iPad now. Raise your hand if you have what would justly be called a smartphone.
It helps everybody.
Okay. Now, do you have a Bible on that phone? How many got a Bible on their cell phone? You can get an app okay, for any phone you want to pick. And they're what? How much do they cost? Nothing. They're free. Free. Now, what an amazing world we're living in. Went up ice fishing the other day, a week ago, with Craig took Nicholas with us, and got to talk to him about a Gideon Bible. Okay, we were sharing a room up there at Diamond Lake, and so we had a Gideon Bible. So I asked him, Nicholas, you don't know what the Gideon Society is? Well, he's 14 years old, he can't know what that is. What is the Gideon Society?
It's the five Bibles, hotels,
and motels. How old is the Gideon Society? Goes back to the late 1800s. And all they wanted to do, a bunch of successful businessmen, was to blanket the world with Bibles. So effectively, they set out and tried to put one in every hotel, motel room, you know, in America. And pretty well, they succeeded, haven't they? I haven't been in too many where, you know, I always look. Sure enough, you get in a drawer somewhere, you know, you need to find that Bible. Okay, well, great. And today, you don't even need a Gideon Society. You've got the App Store. And it's free. And it'll change your place, and you can put bookmarks in it. And wherever you go, when you have 5 minutes, most chapters in the Bible, say Psalms, so, rather than 5 minutes, you can read a whole chapter in the Bible easily. You'd be astonished how much Bible you could read if you just always had one with you, but they're so heavy. No, they're in the phone now for free. And in fact, it'll confuse you. There's about 6 or 8 versions, you know, for an iPhone. And I've got 3 of them loaded up on my phone. It's not even, you know, a space problem. And so highly recommend that. Yes, Marge, you know, absolutely. Now, Solomon's point was, when you're evaluating riches, the richest rich of them all, you know, is that wisdom and that righteousness. Okay, any more? 24. Okay, let's go to chapter 27 then. Chapter 27, verses 23 and 24. All right, he who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor. Oops, I'm in chapter 28. That's not going to work. 27, verses 23 and 24. Know well the condition of your flocks. Pay attention to your herds, for riches are not forever, nor does the crown endure to all generations. Now, didn't he just come right out now and say, I'm going to make them like eagles with wings flying up to the heavens? This is a straightforward declaration. Riches are not forever. Well, I know, you know, I can't take them to heaven with me. It's been about 30 or 40 years ago, I saw a little cartoon. Some people were standing over a coffin, and the one says to the other, he had it all turned into traveler's checks and took it with him. No, he didn't, did he? No, you can't take it with you. And so in these two verses, pay attention now, know the condition of your flocks and your herds. Riches are not forever, nor does the crown endure to all generations. Now, they're living with every bit as tenuous as ours is. And we say, well, you know, 6 years ago the economy tanked, and we've had nothing but trouble ever since, you know, and everybody's lost value in their homes, you know, and all the rest of this. And that never happened in the old days, did it? In the old days, did they have inflation? Sure they did. Okay, but worse, they had famine. They had drought, which we do too. But you know, in our society today, when those things happen, you can pretty well escape it. Shades of the grace of wrath moving, all the rest of that. I mean, I know it can be tough, but nonetheless, in those days, if you wanted to flee a famine, what did you have to do? Lace on your sandals. Now what? We're going for a hike. Even in the old Grace of Wrath movie, they were in a pickup truck. they had all kinds of trouble, but they were on wheels. You know, and so it's all relative. Know then the condition of your flocks. When I read this, I have a tendency to think, and you'll change the oil in your car, pay attention to the air pressure in your tires, kind of a thing. Whatever it is that you have as your stock today. We frequently speak of rolling stock, you know, being our vehicles, for instance. But whatever source of income you have, whatever kind of job you have, whatever it is that you're working with, pay attention to it. Don't be negligent. Don't be flippant about it. Solomon was a guy who was not spending a lot of time just sitting around listening to music. He did a fair amount. He had the best singers in all of Israel. He said so in Ecclesiastes. But he was a guy who knew how to keep everything in its place. And he knew well the condition of his flocks, even though he was, you know, king over Israel. He also knew that you would take care of what before you build the house? We had this a couple weeks back. We were talking about the sluggard, I think it was, and diligence. Yeah, the diligent guy is working in the field, and first he takes care of his crops. Then what does he do only after that? Then you build your house. Okay? Matter of priorities. Any comment or question on 23 and 24? Don't set your heart on these things. Chapter 28 and verse 8. I'm turning one page too many here. I don't want to do that tonight.
Verse 8, he who increases his wealth by interest and usury gathers it for him who is gracious to the poor. Now again, brother, I have to read between the lines when I see something like this. I'm pretty sure that's not the way it works, you know, at the Bank of America. So it has to be here that Solomon, for us, is, you know, pulling back the veil a little bit to give us a peek into how God operates the world, how God handles things down here in what we call life under the sun, or is the way that Solomon referred to it. He who increases his wealth by interest and usury, reading between the lines, God knows this, and God does not appreciate this. When your wealth has been squeezed out of somebody else, if you have done to them what is wrong, and notice in here, you have to be very careful with all this, is there anything inherently inherently sinful in charging interest? Is the thing itself a sin?
No.
But under the old law, what about interest? Who could you charge it to? Jerry?
It had to do especially with exploiting the poor. Not so much as a vehicle of business where you pay somebody for the use of their money, a legitimate business transaction. But here comes a poor person who has no choice but to borrow. He has to borrow in order to survive. And so the Shylock fellow says, all right, I've got you. I'll loan it to you, but it's going to cost you big time. The exploitation of the poor was what God was prohibiting in the law of Moses. I mean, just to indulge me for a moment, years and years ago, when we were trying to build a church building over in Bend, a small group, we didn't have a lot of resource, so we were trying to borrow money from various sources, and we were paying it back by the quarter and on 8% interest. And I met a man over in Idaho that was well able to loan money. And I asked him if we could borrow from him and offered to pay him 8%. And he pointed out that the Bible forbids the charging of interest, and therefore he could not loan to us. And I suggested, well, if that was a problem for him, he could let us use his money for free.
Did you get that loan, Jerry?
That's just a misapplication of the idea of usury as it was set forth in the law of Moses.
Okay. You are not allowed. If your brother gave you his cloak as surety, then what? At the end of the day? Yeah, give it back to him. Okay, so once again, God is managing and regulating, you know, all of these things. So again, the point is, the thing is not sinful in and of itself, but it has to be properly, you know, used. And if it is a means for destroying somebody, then that is evil, that is sin, that's intolerable. And Solomon's making the point, too, that there's going to be a penalty to pay for that. I'm just full of thoughts tonight. I don't know what's going on here. You know, we load 16 tons, and what do you get? And then you get older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't call me because I can't go. I what? I owe my soul to the company store. Okay? You all know what the company store was? You know what sharecropping is? In both of these systems, what happened to the individual who had gotten, you know, their advance from the company store or was working as a sharecropper, both of them wound up what? Enslaved. They were trapped. There was no way to get out of the system. You could not do it. Jerry?
Yeah, on that point of the Old Testament law of Moses concept of usury, there was a verse that I was looking for. I found it here in Leviticus 25, verse 29. If a man sells a house in a walled city, then he may redeem it within a whole year after it is sold. Within a full year, he may redeem it. But if it is not redeemed, wait a minute. No, what I want for 35. becomes poor and falls into poverty among you, then you shall help him like a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with you. Take no usury or interest from him, but fear your God, that your brother may live with you. Here's the man who has fallen into desperate straits. He's not trying to borrow money in order to do business. He needs to borrow in order to survive. And God told the Jew, you do not take advantage of that man. You help him.
I can't add anything to what Jerry said there, but I would have you read the next verse. Jerry stopped, one more verse of 37. You shall not give him your silver at interest, nor your food, what?
At a profit
or for gain. See? And so, exactly what the preceding verses had said, but the idea there was, is that whatever you do in business, you're helping your brother, and not what? And not hurting him. And if he failed at business, well then what? You're helping your brother, see? And not at anybody's interest, either.
That's going the extra mile.
Exactly that. We're all in this together, and as you know, we're going to finish this race together. And of course, that's what Acts chapter 5 was all about. We were talking about on Sunday morning too, that seeing these principles carried forward into New Testament times and into the New Covenant, into Christianity. And Ananias and Sapphira got themselves in trouble. Why? Because they lied. See, that's all. They had the means, they lied about it, and it cost them their lives. Okay, anybody else on chapter 28, verse 8? God, apparently, I just didn't finish it up in the last part of verse 8, is going to be involved in seeing to the redistribution. There's a term we hate so much today, but he gathers it for him who is what? Who is gracious to the poor. What goes around comes around, you reap what you sow, and it looks like God's keeping the tally. You know, in good time, these things ebb and flow. And so you've all seen, our economy just roaring, and you've all seen our economy, at the other end of that spectrum, and we watch it go up and down time and again, just the way that it works. Sort of a self-balancing mechanism. Okay, chapter 28, also at verse 20. Ordinarily I put those on the same line, but see, I messed that one up. Chapter 28 now and verse 20. A faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who makes haste to be rich will what? Not go unpunished. If you're hasty to get rich, you deserve a punishment, and you're going to get it. That you'll pay for. So what's that tell you about getting rich? If Solomon was going to... Okay, well, go ahead, Ted. Well, there's been an awful lot of real sad stories, about that, to say the least. I don't know if that would quite qualify for hasty to get rich. Maybe so, I see an easy way to do that. When you think of somebody that's hasty to get rich, what do you see? This is maybe the guy who spends his whole check on the lottery. See, now, he just lost his bearings, and he's acting irresponsibly, precipitously, what we call impetuously. It was an, what kind of a purchase? It was a impulse, kind of a buy. Solomon was not an impulsive person. Solomon was carefully weighing everything that he was doing. And he was speaking on behalf of the Lord, and so far as wisdom comes from him, and he says, make haste to get wealthy, and punishment is coming. That is not acceptable morally to God's use. Amen. In every one of these cases, you have that.
Also, they're setting their mind again on wealth. That's the only thing that matters. It doesn't matter what they do to their family. It doesn't matter what they do to their friends or the other individuals. How they treat them, just so long as the money trickles in.
Amen. And you've seen now several different terms that have been used. All of them come down, though, to the fact that the focus in your life is on what? The money. And when you've lost your focus on the things that matter, wisdom, knowledge, you know, family, then troubles come. Great.
Can I say something that goes along with what you just said?
Maybe just a little bit louder.
That is interesting, isn't it?
I hope you all heard that. This apparently surveyor, you know, did an actual survey and discovered the most popular vehicle among millionaires is what? The pickup truck, Ford F-150. How many of you remember the Volkswagen commercial? It was a Volkswagen commercial a bunch of years ago. It was all about this guy, and he's at this giant soiree, you know, and obviously everybody's dripping in jewels and money, and he went from here to there, and I think he had a yacht, he had all these other things. And the punchline, the commercial was, how did he acquire all these things? And then they showed the Volkswagen, because he got the highest gas mileage. That's the principle right there. These guys, you know, and there's many exceptions to it. There's, you know, there's a Barry Madoff out there for every success story, too, obviously. But, you know, truly, the people who have a lot of money will tend to be the people who what? It all these things will go together, but what I was looking for is just kind of, you know, to cover it with a blanket. They're the people that understand money. People that have it are the people that know how it works. And God's given us these principles here as well. And so, you don't make a lot of money by throwing money away at wild kinds of ideas. That's a way to lose money. You don't make money hastily. You need Benjamin Franklin. Do that haste. Wait. Sure.
Yeah. My uncle used to, I have two uncles, and one used to try to get underneath the other one's skin by, you know, talking about all the money he had here, what he'd been doing to make money, and so forth and so on. And the other uncle was very quiet, you know, and he said, my money's sitting out in the barn. He's got the combines and all the farm equipment and whatever, and the reason that the pickup makes sense for what the wealthy people. The wealthy people own land. If you own land, you need a pickup to get around. So even if they don't live on the land, they own a pickup.
It's a workout. Okay. I got just a couple of minutes. I've only got one more to go, so let's close out tonight. It's the longest one in the series here. Chapter 30, verses 7, 8, and 9. All the others, you'll notice we have just one verse or two verses. It's a one long place. We've actually got three that will go together, verses 7, 8, and 9. Two things I ask of you. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep deception and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is my portion, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be in want and steal and profane the name of my God. Now, isn't that just a great summary for all we've talked about on the wealth? Wealth is extremely dangerous. Only the most very capable people can handle it well. It is disaster and ruin for many people. As Ted pointed out, when you read the stories about people that win their millions, you know, in the lottery and wind up, you know, and losing everything. They don't know how to handle it. But poverty, brethren, is no blessing. It's no honor. Okay? Kevier, sitting here on the roof. Okay? It's no great blessing. It's no great honor, you know, either. So the wise man, Solomon now, is teaching us. Is that Solomon here? Chapter 30. I forget now. No, it's Agur. Okay. Agur, in this case, is saying, what should you be praying for? Lord, do not make me wealthy. Don't give me that. But also what? Don't make me poor either.
Because at the ends of the spectrum, there's greater what? There's greater temptation, brethren, at both ends. You're not more righteous because you haven't got any money. You're not more evil because you have a lot. But at both places, there's trial, there's temptation. When you get to the extremes, it's more difficult. What does the wise man want? Just enough to pay all the bills. And leave a little bit for the kids. It's not, you know, a lot in the motorhome. Okay? Any other comment or questions?